In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's a mix-up. It's not a small one. It's a rather large one. Have you heard these two terms? Freedom of worship. Sometimes, I think, intentionally confused with freedom of religion, or more accurately, the free exercise of religion, which is the language that the U.S. Constitution used when it gives us religious freedom, recognizes our religious freedom. We're going to be talking about freedom of worship versus free exercise of religion. Dr. Robert George joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. He's professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and visiting professor at Harvard University Law School, author of several books, including Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism and In Defense of Natural Law. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks very much. It's good to be back on the show.
Before we get to our subject there, I do want your reaction to two things that occurred very recently. First of all, the Supreme Court's decision in favor of the Little Sisters of the Poor regarding the HHS mandate. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's a very good thing that the Little Sisters, who do wonderful work for the elderly, and especially the impoverished elderly, it's a wonderful thing that they are not going to be forced to violate their consciences and implicate themselves in providing contraceptive and abortifacient services, abortion drug coverage. That obviously is contrary to their Christian faith. So that's a good thing. On the other hand, it's not a complete victory. The issue of principle has been essentially punted by the Supreme Court. It might be because there's a 4-4 tie with Justice Scalia's seat now open. So we're not quite sure how to read the tea leaves here, not quite sure whether the punt reflects the inability to get a majority one way or another, or whether it's something else. All we know is that there's a per curiam opinion. That means an opinion for the court that's not written by, or for which responsibility is not taken by, a particular justice. But the good news is still good news, and that is the Little Sisters are not going to be forced to violate their conscience.
After Monday's Supreme Court ruling, Dr. George, President Obama stated this, and I quote, "The practical effect right now is that women will still continue to be able to get contraception if they are getting health insurance, and we are properly accommodating religious institutions who have objections to contraception." What's your reaction to President Obama's statement there?
Well, my reaction is the president should not be trying to force Americans of any faith to violate their consciences in order to facilitate non-necessary government provision of services or products. The government had countless ways, if it insists on providing contraception and abortion drugs, has countless ways of making those available to people. I think any Christian, certainly when it comes to abortion-inducing drugs, would think that the government has no business providing them. Indeed, the government should be prohibiting abortion. But laying that aside, if the government is going to provide them, they should not be providing them by commandeering religious institutions or religious people or anyone into providing those services. The government can do it itself if the government wishes to. And clearly, it was possible for the government to do it without commandeering the Little Sisters of the Poor in this particular case. So frankly, it's a scandal that the Obama administration let it go this far, took the Little Sisters all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, attempting to force them to violate their consciences. It's really reprehensible, and there's no excuse for it. The president ought to be ashamed of himself.
I also wanted your thoughts on President Obama's executive order that was issued late last week on transgendered access in public schools.
Well, that too is shameful. The federal government has no authority over the restrooms of the nation's schools, and the pretext that it's enforcing civil rights provisions here is really outrageous. What you have here is another case of executive overreach by the Obama administration. Bureaucrats within the Department of Education and the Department of Justice simply rewriting laws to make laws that were never intended to serve a purpose like this be used for that purpose. If a decision is to be made to let boys into girls' bathrooms and girls into boys' shower rooms and so forth and so on, that decision, which I think would be a very bad decision, but if it's to be made, it needs to be made by the people's elected representatives in Congress, not by the executive branch, and certainly not by faceless bureaucrats in the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. What you have here is a violation of the very basic constitutional principles of Republican government.
Last week, there was a religious liberty bill in the Missouri House, I believe, that failed to make it out of the committee because several Republicans actually voted against it. One of them, Representative Jim Franson, is quoted as saying, "They call it religious freedom. I feel I'm free in this country to worship the way I want, and I don't need a law to tell me how to worship." What does Representative Franson fail to understand about the constitutional right to the free exercise of religion?
Well, if I understand this bill correctly, the senator doesn't understand it at all. The government is not, the bill is not telling anybody how to worship. Quite the opposite. The bill is protecting the broad freedom of religion, which is in no way reducible merely to the right to worship. The right to worship is only part of the more general right to the free exercise of religion, as it's articulated in the First Amendment of our Constitution. It's not telling him or anybody else how to worship. It's rather protecting their rights. And I have to ask the question, particularly of these Republican public officials. We have seen this in Indiana. We have seen this in Georgia. We have seen this in various places around the country where business interests, economic interests, the Chamber of Commerce, Google, Apple, Microsoft, the NCAA, the NBA, the big corporations, the plutocrats, if I can be very candid about it, come in and try to apply their economic pressure to the states and to the municipalities, operating by using their influence with Republican senators and legislators and delegates, using their influence to try to stop religious liberty protections, which would otherwise go through these legislative houses, and protect ordinary people like bakers, like photographers, like wedding planners, like people who don't want to participate in abortions, despite being nurses or obstetricians and so forth. And frankly, it's shameful. I'll use that word again. It's shameful that these Republican, in many cases, Republican politicians, the Democrats just lost on this issue altogether, that the Republican politicians who claim to support traditional principles and civil liberties will yield to the power of the business lobby to override basic religious freedom rights or to refuse to protect basic religious freedom rights. The Republicans are going to have to decide which side they're on. Are they on the side of civil liberties and basic moral values, or are they on the side of business and economics, no matter what the business establishment wants? In this case, they want to side with the LGBT lobby and the like against religious liberty protections for ordinary citizens.
Why is the term of art here freedom of worship instead of the constitutional language, free exercise?
Well, as soon as you hear freedom of worship, you know you're being tricked. Because while the freedom to go to church or not go to church or go to this particular church or this other religious house rather than another one is part of, an important part of the freedom of worship, it's a very limited, a very small part of freedom of religion. It's a very limited, very small part of it. The freedom of religion includes not only the right to worship, but the right to advocate one's faith and witness to one's faith in the public square. The right to be free of governmental interference with one's conscientious religious, the fulfillment of one's conscientious religious obligations, including the obligation that many Christians and Orthodox Jews and Muslims and others believe they have not to participate in, for example, same-sex ceremonies or to perform or participate in or refer for abortions. And beyond that, the right of freedom of religion, the free exercise of religion, includes the right practiced, exercised so wonderfully by Dr. Martin Luther King in the fight against racial injustice, the right to go into the public square and advocate on the basis of one's religiously informed values, principles of justice and the common good. The right to religious freedom is in no way reducible merely to the fragment of it that we call the right to worship. And when somebody says, I'm for religious freedom, and what I mean by it is merely the right to worship, you know that what you have there is an enemy of religious freedom, not a friend of religious freedom.
Given the current state of things, we have the president using this term. We have, as you said, political leaders who ought to know better using this term. Sooner or later, these kinds of things make it to the Supreme Court. Do you see any evidence that the court currently comprised understands the difference between mere freedom of worship and the expansive right articulated in the Constitution of the free exercise?
We currently have 8 justices sitting on the court. I know how 4 of them stand, and I know how 4 others stand. 4 of them stand for a robust conception of the free exercise of religion. 4 of them stand for, well, let's just say, a less than robust understanding of the free exercise of religion. But having said that, even the 4 more liberal justices have shown themselves to have a broader understanding of the free exercise of religion than the Obama administration has. For example, a few years ago, in the now famous case of Hosanna Tabor, it actually involved a Lutheran church, a Lutheran ministry. In that case, a unanimous court rejected the Obama administration's claim that the so-called ministerial exception, that is the right of churches to employ on the basis of its own criteria, including moral criteria, its own ministers and decide who could and couldn't be a minister. That ministerial exemption, the Obama administration claimed, was not protected or not part of or did not follow from the First Amendment free exercise right. The court entirely rejected that, 9-0. Even the justices that President Obama himself appointed, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan, voted against the administration, because even though they have a less than robust understanding of religious freedom, it's still more robust than the extremely cramped and narrow conception that the Obama administration is promoting.
Paint a picture for us, if you would, Dr. George. If the free exercise of religion is whittled down to the mere freedom of worship, what does the place of religiously minded people, what does it look like in such a society where all we have is freedom of worship?
Well, we're second-class citizens. Religion is not given the protection that it actually enjoys under our Constitution. And a figure like Martin Luther King could not do what the actual historical Martin Luther King did, which was to go out and proclaim his biblical faith, act on his biblical faith, bring his biblical faith to bear on issues of public concern, issues of human rights and the common good. The right to free exercise of religion integrally includes the right to advocate in the public square on the basis of one's religiously informed views about justice and the common good.
Would it in effect say, look, if someone wants to enter the public square, either as a private citizen or as an elected official, they would have to, for all intents and purposes, behave like, what, an atheist, more or less?
Like a secularist. Yeah, I mean, the effect of whittling down the true, robust right to religious freedom, the right to the free exercise of religion, whittling it down to the right to worship, the practical effect is to establish as the state religion liberal secularism. And, of course, one cannot help but suspect that that is the actual goal of the people who talk in terms of the freedom of worship. What they would like to do is establish liberal secularism, their own worldview, their own comprehensive vision of human nature, dignity, and destiny, as the official religion of the country. Now, the fact that it's not a theistic religion is neither here nor there. It's a pseudo-religion. It's a worldview. It functions as a religion, and they're trying to establish it as the state religion. Well, the other clause in the Constitution's First Amendment that's relevant here is the one that's called the Establishment Clause. We're not supposed to have any established religion, not Catholicism, not Lutheranism, not Judaism, but also not secularism, not liberal secularism. No faith is supposed to be given that role. Rather, all faiths are put on an equal plane to be able to, who's the members of these faiths have the right to go into the public square and compete for the allegiance of their fellow citizens, to advocate public policy based on their religiously informed ideas and beliefs about justice and the common good.
Finally, with only 30 seconds here, Dr. George, what do you make of the fact that it is, in some cases here, people of faith, people who are professed Christians, who are willing to accept freedom of worship rather than free exercise?
Well, something other than their Christian faith, then, is what's calling the tune there. Maybe it's the Chamber of Commerce. Maybe it's Google. Maybe it's the desire to have campaign contributions. Maybe it's the desire to make sure that businesses don't boycott big businesses, PayPal, Google, Bruce Springsteen, don't boycott the state, as they're now threatening to do to North Carolina, because North Carolina's trying to make sure that that girls' shower rooms are not available to boys as well. So it could be that that's what's calling the tune, but what can't possibly be calling the tune is the kind of Christianity, the kind of Christian faith that praises Dr. Martin Luther King for going into the public square with his religiously informed convictions and advocating for what he believed justice and the common good required.
Dr. Robert George is professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and visiting professor at Harvard University Law School, author of several books, including Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism, and In Defense of Natural Law. You can purchase these books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. George, thank you very much for being our guest.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. We'll be right back. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
How would you like to attend a conference and hear Larry Rast, Carl Fakencher, Brian Wolfmiller, Adrian Dorheinz, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk? You're invited to the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Issuesetc.org.